You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, Power Athlete Nation. Welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. We are live.
On location.
On location, between two ferns. We're actually in Columbus, Ohio, between two ferns, in a basement in a speakeasy. Yeah. We randomly found this place. We showed up to get some beers and pizza.
Mikey,
they said he had a cool spot.
I do owe some thank yous. So
okay, lay it out, Ms. McQuilkin.
Old college buddy that is a Columbus native gave him a ring. We needed a studio. And this was his Hail Mary long shot. He's like, you got to give these guys a call. Joking. I gave him a call, and he's like, I can't believe that worked. So nice. Dave Fresh, that's a thank you. We're at Mikey's late night pizza, something
slice
like that.
Late.
We're joined by our good friend Jim Wendler.
Hello.
So for those of you guys
Thank you for having me, buddy. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
We've been here for about an hour.
This is our 27th beer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, dude, if you guys don't know Jim, you guys have probably been living under a fucking rock, so get out from underneath that rock. But, I mean, longtime friend and alum of Power Athlete Radio, so thanks for coming
on,
dude.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me.
Here's to you.
That's right.
Looks like, what are you nursing that beer over here? Got a nipple on that thing.
It's my fourth. Just kidding.
This is my 27th. Oh, man. So, dude. I feel like we've been, not that we've gotten rid of all the, or talked about all the good stuff, but we've had a nice little catch up here, but like, so give me the lowdown, like give me the script, like, you've been, you know, obviously living in London, Ohio, and working as a strength coach and.
Yeah, I did, to make a long story short, I don't even remember when I'm trying, maybe 2015, 2016, I had finished the last book I was working on, and it took me about a year to get it all down. And during that year, I'm the most unlivable fucking asshole you've ever seen. My wife hated me. I would always write at night. And when I say at night, I mean, you know, from midnight to whatever. And I just became kind of a dick. And it was finally done. And I went to go see Dave at Elite FTS. A parent that works there, a parent of a London athlete, said, hey, you know, they're looking for people to help at the London. And I was like, oh, you know, I'll think about it. This is a local at the high school for the football team. And I went to my wife and I'm like, listen, I just got asked. I'm, you know, maybe, I don't know. And I was so reticent because, like, I love my personal time more than anything. And, you know, I was worried that it would go by the wayside. And she's like, you got to get out of the house. Just like when, by the way, when I got John contacted my wife to do this, not me.
Well, let me give some backstory. So Jim is allergic to his telephone. Like if you call Jim, if you text him, he's going to get ghosted.
I don't even check my email anymore.
I know. And I know this and I don't take it personally at all. And so smart enough, I reached out to Phil, who's a mutual buddy of ours. And because I think when I was up visiting him, he's like, oh, man, we've been doing a bunch of stuff for Jim in terms of merch. And I deal with his wife. And I heard and I called Phil up. I'm like, hey, man, you got Jim's wife's number? And so he kicked me your wife's number. And so I texted his wife and said, hey, you know, we're coming to Columbus, Ohio. I'd love to get Jim on the podcast. You know, what works best? Can we come to you guys? Like, what works? And she goes, he needs to get out of the house. He'll totally do it. And so the best is she didn't even tell you. She's like, hey, honey, I got to drop you up with your friends at 6:30 tonight.
When you must have contacted, it was probably maybe 2 weeks ago, three, I don't know when it was, but when you reached, and she's like, hey, you know, she's like, first she's always like, do you know, I get text all the time. Do you know? She's like, you know John Wilbur? I'm like, yeah, he's a good dude. He's like, all right, then you got a podcast. And then she told me when I got home from training the ding-dongs today. But so that's, I just don't enjoy that. You know, I don't enjoy social media and I'm not like an old grumpy bastard. I don't know. Like I think of like the great men in this world and every one of them never had to use social media, you know, like, so I don't know. And it's just, I'm 40, I don't know how old are you?
I'm 45.
Okay. I'm a little older than you are, yeah. But, I just, you know, grow up without it and I'm okay without it. So it doesn't really, you know, if I was 20 or 30, but anyway,
well it's the weird part of, sharing your life with a whole bunch of people you don't know.
Yeah. And it was easier for me before I really settled down, even though I had been married before. I have a son who's 17 right now, going to be 18 next month. Then you start to value your family more, and I value the privacy a lot. And I don't, this is like, it's just all part of the maturation process, but I don't need you to like what I do or what we do at the high school and stuff. We don't really put up a lot of stuff about it, about what work at the high school. And you only get the more secure you are. Like, I just, you know, you don't like me, that's fine. You know, if, I don't know. It's a weird kind of, you talk about like our sons, our young sons, they don't care about a lot of stuff. Cause they're like, my son, he goes to swimming class. He just right up, talk to people. Hey, blah, 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 blah. Now you and me are like, like, listen, you don't even look at me, motherfucker.
Dude, I had a funny interaction today while waiting in line for the car. There was a dude who was obviously a power lifter standing next to me, and I could see him looking me up and down, and like we were kind of standing there awkward, and I like kind of like look over at him, look over at him, look
you
over
like
at him.
You like testosterone too?
He like all of a sudden is like, hey, are you competing this weekend? And I was like, I'm in town to teach for the Army. We'll do an education thing and do some podcasting.
Yeah.
And he's like, who are you doing podcasts with? I'm like, oh, we're supposed to going to go see my buddy Jim Wendler. And his eyes got big and he's like, you know Jim Wendler?
See, he's dropping names. And just like we were talking earlier.
That's what John does.
It would be different if we weren't doing with Jim Wendler. Yeah. I was like, I'm sitting down to see Jim Wendler. You know?
Probably give him a handy.
CJ's. Because that's what we do. And I was like, we're going to see Jim and do a podcast and fucking do this. And like the dude's heart, I could see it fluttering because obviously he's like, my entire lifting experience in life began on Elite FTS and this. And then the guy went into this like homage of Dave Tate and Jim Wendler and how 531 saved his life and his marriage. And, you know, he was able to get, multiple erections in a single day because of Jim Wendler. I mean, and
it's not from 531. It's thinking of me.
I just didn't even realize that the cachet that I'm able to pull by just fucking like, hold on, you dropped the Jim Wendler name. And then we totally got into this conversation. And then he was like giving me the, all of his geared lifts and this. And I'm like,
yeah, then you're just like, it's cool, but...
We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Do you want to build thick, sidewalk-splitting slabs of muscle? Let me introduce you to Jack Street. Get access to the same tried-and-true training methods I followed during my 10 years in the NFL, all to walk into training camp at 308 pounds at sub-8% body fat. Punch your ticket to the gain train and join thousands of residents already following Jack Street. Head to powerathletehq.com/Jack Street and claim your 7-day free trial today. Now back to the show.
Social
media, not liking it. Kids going swimming and you don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah. After I wrote the book, my wife's like, you got to get the fuck out of the house. Like, you're driving me bananas. And so I volunteered at the high school and I first started on the field. And I have no patience for on the field stuff. I realize that I don't.
Like football coaching?
Yeah. I have no patience for that because to me, football. I know you're going to laugh at this. Just go as violent as you can.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer in like violence solves a lot of stuff on the football field. So hold on. But I couldn't get the kids to do that, and I couldn't understand because when I played football, that was like most of the time I was like, dude, fucking calm the shit down. Yeah. Like you got to just. Let's at least take this first step correctly and then go bananas. And the amount of time that football coaches have to put in, I was not willing to put in. About 2 weeks into that, I went up to the weight room and I said, hey, how about this? How about I handle all the strength stuff? Because the head coach was handling that. I'm like, dude, you're stressed out. And at this time, I didn't really know him, but I'm like, just let me do this. So he kind of handed the reins over to me very hesitantly because his background was in strength training. And so I really worked with the JV. I got them.
He's like, do you know anything?
Yeah, that's right. What the fuck are you? So I started working with the JV and I went as simple as I could. All we did for like 6 weeks was dumbbell squats and pushups. I'm like, listen, we're just going to get good at two things. And it went from, oh, great, we got, you know, we got personal attention to, what are we doing today, coach? To, we're doing, like, they were so prideful that they were doing the same shit all the time. And, like, it was miserable, and they loved it. It was kind of like, you know, it was like a weird attitude change. So, but anyway, to make a long story short, by the time the season ended, I had those guys ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
I taught them how to squat, how to bench, how to jump onto a box, like all this stuff that people take for granted, I think. And to make a long story short, that year we won 3 games, and we were one of the worst football teams I've ever seen. We had multiple injuries, and you guys, you know this too. Magically, when you win, everyone's shoulders feel pretty good. You know, the ankle, twisted ankle.
It's fine.
It doesn't seem so bad. It got so bad that I, you know, we don't have a huge team. It's a very small town that I think we had 7 or 8 starters out for the final game of the year. That means we have 7 starters out on offense and 7 on defense. It's everyone plays both ways, or most kids play both ways. So you can imagine how bad, and we didn't even cross the 50-yard line in that final game. Mm-hmm. So the next, you know, offseason, I give this the returning, I guess, the seniors-to-be all said, let's just start training the next week. So our final game was on Friday. They came, they voted to come in on Monday. I give them all the credit in the world. I sat them down on Saturday after the final game, and I said, this is what we're doing. You're going to be bored out of your mind. You know, we're going to train 3 days a week. This is what we're doing. And they completely 100% turnout on that next Monday, and they bought in, make the playoffs the next year. Nice. We've made the playoffs every single year. Now, the one thing I always laugh about is we are not the most, and I tell the kids all the time, we're not going to win any game on talent. Maybe one game against some schlep team or something, but we're just going to win because we're going to outstrength them, outcondition them, and we're going to put people in fucking body bags. That's, I said, I don't care how many games, I don't care if we lose every game. I want fucking players on the ground, and I want them to know that they played us.
Nice.
I said, if you do that, if every play is a fucking fight and you put someone down, you're the most likely you're going to win. If you don't win, they're just better.
Yeah.
And we've lost 2 playoff games the same team, and they're just a better team.
You know,
it's hard to beat that.
Well, you bring up a great point, like the fact that, like, when we played, and dude, I mean, I was a master of violence, and I've always said I wasn't a great football player, but I understood intensity and violence, and I was fucking really good at managing pain and hurting people.
Yeah.
And when I retired, people asked me if I wanted to coach football. And the farther I've gotten away from it, I always tell, and the comment I've made over the years is like, the style in which I played is not coveted anymore.
Not even coveted. You can't coach it.
Well, you can't do it. Like cleaning people up around the pile.
You put them in a like V for Vendetta. They stuck her in a fucking room to get her all fucking amped up.
there's no way.
Yeah.
And like the.
Now, make sure you talk to me about the spread offense.
Oh, I got you.
And I'll talk to you about, you know, Milo, Miss Linsky.
Yeah.
All right. Make sure you bring that up.
Because
we got the CTE brothers here.
Well, I was gonna ask me about the CTE after. Okay, it's been really fascinating too, especially in the NFL, seeing this.
When was your last season?
I got hurt. My 10th year was in 08, and I retired in 09. This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show.
Hold on, let me do the math in my head. So when did you start playing then?
99.
Yeah, so most of your career was still kind of old. I mean, the passing started to get really big.
We had, like, these old, like, fucking, like, dinosaur type of dudes where it was, like, old. Kind of like, I was in a weird transition phase.
Yeah, yeah.
Because right is about the time I retired was when the new CBA happened in the lockout, and then they completely changed the rules.
Okay.
That was when, like, you know, we would go to training camp, and it was, like, 42 days of training camp, and we were in pads off, and it was just fucking, like, a baton death march.
Yeah.
And now they have, like, 5-padded practices the entire fucking season.
Yep.
Or it's 8, but it's, like, in training.
Holy shit, is it 8?
Yeah, 8 total with training camp. And so it's completely changed, and like just the physicality and the violence and the way it was played just isn't coveted anymore. And for the most part, They just got rid of
those
dudes.
It's not just not coveted. It's looked frowned upon.
Well, yeah. I mean, so even at the end of my career, I was getting fined a bunch, and they kept when I would get fined or I'd get a letter that I was had a history of violence.
Yeah.
And then
great movie, by the way.
Yeah, it was a good movie. Excellent movie. But they were basically trying to change the culture by making interventions on players that they viewed as a history of violence.
Yeah, Chuck Cecil's.
Yeah, they got rid of those fucking guys and the Timmy Houks and, I mean, dudes like Runyon and myself, and they were just dudes that went out and fucking tried to take scalps. And that was the way we played football. And to see it now, it was funny, man, like watching the Super Bowl, I'm like, fucking patty cake. It's just how it plays. And then you get like that Aaron, what was it, Aaron Donnelly? Or
Donald.
Donald. I mean, he's out there fucking killing these dudes, and these offensive linemen don't know how to use their heads. I mean, so, dude, my greatest weapon was this 7-8-pound helmet that I had strapped on.
I told the kids, if they didn't want you to use your head, they wouldn't give you a fucking helmet.
Well, they frown upon that.
Yeah, I know.
They don't want you to use your helmet.
Yeah.
And like I was like, dude, I the reason he's able to do what he does is because no offensive lineman is putting his fucking head in his fucking ribs and trying to break his fucking neck.
I want to get back to my boys, my kids, but I'm going to talk. I spoke at the EFS something. I don't know. It was like a sports thing. And Milo was there, Mislinski. Mm-hmm. And so I talked to him, and I talked to a whole bunch of other coaches from both college and a couple from the pros. And I asked him, because I wanted to understand running volume, because my running volume for the kids is so low compared to what I did. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot more, it's not there, like, I can go into this about what actually happened, but I was just curious about all that, and I asked Milo, I'm like, well, what about offensive linemen? Because Milo was an offensive lineman. He's like, oh, they're horrible. And he said, the only schools that produce fairly good is Wisconsin, Iowa, Alabama, and there was one other one I can't remember, because they huddle up, and they run. And they run the ball.
Yeah, they have a fast-paced offense.
Because if you run that fast-paced offense, you're pretty much, again, like you said, playing patty cake, and then no one's stunting because they're too tired.
Yeah.
And I understand the reason behind that, but that's not preparing you for the NFL. But he said they are woefully unprepared, except for what I can't remember the other team.
Whatever. Auburn, SEC, Georgia?
You know,
it might have been Georgia.
What was it? It was a couple years ago.
It wasn't a surprise that like Wisconsin and Iowa were on there.
A couple years ago, Dave Spitz asked us to come out and work with, he had a couple offensive linemen. He was training for the combine.
Okay.
And it was really interesting. And I told those guys, we went out and I was like, hey, man, I'm going to teach you how to do the world's best fashion show. I'm going to teach you all the shit that the coaches don't think you knew. I want to show you how to set and run. So when you get down in your stance, like all the little bullshit that they're going to look for, they're going to be excited about, I'll teach you all the cheat codes.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And what was wild is that after we got done, after about a week, and I was like, you guys are fucking good to go. And then Dave asked me, he's like, what do you think? I'm like, I don't know if these guys are going to get drafted, but every one of these dudes can play. And every one of those guys, I don't think any, but I thought one guy got drafted. Every one of them's gone on and started.
Wow.
And so it's pretty interesting that like their ability to evaluate talent isn't always as high as they think it is. And like, when you look at the majority, especially offensive linemen, a lot of those guys, I mean, there's some guys that are fucking number one picks overall that are camp misses.
Yeah.
But you look at the majority of dudes are third, fourth, fifth rounder free agents that come in and just know how to grind and fucking whoop somebody's ass.
Question on that. Is that the coaching at that level?
No, I think... I think when you get into like the really high end programs, you have such talented skill positions. Like he's saying, like they're running a fast paced offense. A guy's, you know, 6'7", 330 pounds, and he's not going against fucking beasts. And he, you know, he's probably got a good set. He looks real long. He has all the intangibles that the NFL is looking for a chop pick, other than what's here and here. And it doesn't really come
all the
in
tangibles almost.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have the intangibles.
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah, there we go.
He's all the tangibles.
Yeah.
So the NFL is so fixated on all these, like, you know, can he do, you know, and with the school he plays at. And at the end of the day, man, like, I mean, it takes a guy who legitimately has the ability to go in and play at a high level repeatedly. Whereas I think a lot of guys, and you've seen this, man, you've seen a lot of people that just don't have longevity. Like they, you know, they do great on one day, but can they consistently fucking drive the ball home?
That's a very, my wife and I were talking to some coaching for like UFC, and they're talking about their training and stuff. And it came up like part of it is how much can you handle the training to get to the, to get to be good? Because it's so you might be super talented, but you can't handle the amount of training you need to get to the next level, and you're just hurt all the time. And it's like
those you guys have to be able to handle the volume of work to put yourself in a position to be successful, and which is like in the NFL. I was telling Tex about one of my teammates in college, benched 400 pounds when he was 17, right? The dude was a beast. He trained 2 days a week.
Yeah.
All of a sudden we show up to college and we train 6 days a week. Every day we were in college, he got weaker. He barely benched 300 by the time he was a senior. And I remember asking him, I'm like, "Doe, what's wrong?" He's like, I can't recover. I'm too tired. He's like, "I did really good on 2 days a week. This 6 days a week has burned me to the ground." And he just never had the capacity.
On the flip side of that, that shitty fucking programming. If I had that, hold on.
Oh, yeah, it was.
If he was good, like if he was legit, you're like, "Listen, I'm willing to, like, on this day, you're going to do some fucking pipes. You know, some neck work and, you know, do some back raises or something." You also, the other thing that the NFL has is, I always laugh because if someone gets hurt on Alabama's team or something, or Ohio State, they're like, "Oh my God." It's like, dude, the fourth guy is a fifth round five-star athlete. They're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to be fine.
Is the amount of, it's like, infantry guys just send out the next wave. Fucking guys are dead. Fucking send out the next thing.
Well, they have
there's talents like Aaron Donald or Tom Brady.
They have
Brady
a guy win
something.
Like a fucking Heisman, and they're like, "Hey, this guy is going to be a fifth year senior. He's never played before, and that dude's a number one pick overall."
Yeah.
You're like, "Holy shit! You just happen to play behind a Heisman Trophy winner."
What's that? I always remember the story of Marion Butts. I don't know if you remember that guy.
Yeah.
He never even played in college.
One of the best football names ever. Him and Max Strong.
Max Marion Strong, Butts. Fullback.
Yeah. Max Strong.
Marion Butts.
Who's, yeah, I don't even know Butts? Where I don't know.
He was a running back for the Chargers. And he was at Florida State, I want to say, and he never really played much because I could imagine who was playing in front of him because that was
On similar experiences. Priest Holmes, who was Ricky Williams' backup at Texas, and then John's teammate.
He was good. Yeah. Holy shit!
Yeah, Priest could fucking run.
There was a great I think NFL Throwback did a video on Priest Holmes about that. He had good longevity too.
Yeah, he's a beast.
Anyway, to make a long story short, so real quick, I'm not making a long story short.
Stories long.
We ended up going to playoffs every year, and what we run the wing tee.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Really? The 1950s call? They didn't want their playbook back?
Well, first of all, you don't need to be super talented.
Yeah, and you can plug and drop players in.
And as long as we have guys that are willing to go forward, and that's what I've coached. Like when we train, obviously we want them physically prepared, but part of it is the mental attitude of like, we have to attack. And the good thing is it's the freshmen see the seniors and they see all the work they put in. But so anyway, we run the wing tee and my second year.
You know, those words haven't probably not been uttered in 20 years. We run the wing tee.
Yeah. Well, it's getting more popular because
is it really?
Oh yeah, and I'll tell you why. Because one, no one knows how to defend it.
Yeah.
Two.
Yeah.
If you know how to defend it, or if you know how to, how are you going to practice? You're going to get the shit knocked out of you.
Yeah.
In practice, and are you going to play us hurt? Good luck with that. Other thing is, we pass maybe three times a game or something. And if we complete those passes, they're fucking gone.
Sure.
But what ends up happening is you can probably imagine is if we just have we've had a running back rush for 2,500. And then next year he had 3,000. He didn't play in any fourth quarters. And we had another running back rush for 1,600.
Jesus.
And averaged 500.
But how many times you run the ball? 60 times a game?
Well, it sounds good, but we score almost every fucking play after a while.
That's awesome.
Because it was such a dominant, because you know how it goes. Yeah. If you run the ball, and it's funny because I tell the kids all this time, I'm like, "Listen, you run the ball, you stop the run, don't turn the ball over, you're going to win 85% of your games." In high school, you'll win a lot more than that. In the pros, and it's funny because when the playoffs come around, it's always the teams that run the ball that ended up doing pretty well.
Yeah.
It's a weird phenomenon. But
if you can like the biggest thing, and I think the stat that hopefully most people look at is takeaways. I mean, if you don't give the ball up and you take it away,
that's every possession is gold.
Yeah. Even if you're plus one, your chance of winning a game goes up to like 90%.
Yep. God, I keep on saying,
God damn it.
So last year we had a really good team, and we tried to run the spread for two games. We scored one offensive
Is this you transitioning into the spread?
Yes.
Okay.
So we had one offensive touchdown in two games. We scored two defensive touchdowns, and we only gave up, I think, it was 10-7 we lost and like 14-10. So one offense, whatever it was ridiculous how close the games were. The kids, the seniors, talked to the head coach like, "We're going back. We want the wing tee back. We're gonna do what we know how to do." Next game, 28 points in the first quarter.
Wow!
Just running the shit out of the ball.
How did the spread make its way to the team in the first place?
I don't.
New coach.
So when you say the spread, are you talking about like more like a pro offense, like lining up?
No,
like Texas Tech.
Like, yeah. Big
12 football. Not exactly like that, but close. Like tons of passing.
Yeah.
And the other thing
did
is,
you guys have the quarterback and receivers for that?
Yeah.
I've always thought that it's better for a coach to adapt his offense
to
the players you have.
You can't change your players. You can change
your offense.
So
yeah.
What ended up happening was obviously we end up winning every other game, and then we lose three deep in the playoffs, 14-13. And we just ran the shit. We had the defensive player of the year, two defensive players of the year, offensive player of the year. And all this time we run in the wing tee, I think, in our division in the state, we're always top five in total offense and top five in scoring. So think about that for a second. Top five running. We've had games, maybe five games we hadn't passed the ball once.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because as soon as you pass the ball, what do you think the crowd goes?
Oh, they go nuts.
Bananas.
Yeah.
And it's always like a halfback pass that just flutters. And
yeah.
It's like, damn it, that could have been a touchdown on a run.
Yeah.
But so I don't know if it was like, hey, we have a little more athletic guys this year. Like, or it was parents, because parents do not like the wing tee.
Well,
but boy, do you know what the kids love to do?
Winning.
Well, winning, fucking winning.
Is it because parents have this idea that
that Tom Brady played on our team? A future Tom Brady? You guys know that?
And if you guys had just passed the ball, you would have given him the opportunity to in and get a college scholarship.
You're familiar with Ohio State? Yeah, so.
Well, Army and Navy are still taking
it. Well, but I mean, like, there's So my daughters are 10 years old. I got twin girls, and my little boy's five. And so what blows my, and my one of my daughters swims.
Okay.
And so she's a pretty good swimmer. So she swims like 5 days a week now. And it's amazing, these parents that like they're 10 years old, and the parents are over there talking about like when their kids go to the Olympics. And like even like my son, like we had he played peewee basketball 5 years old. I'm his coach, and these parents are like my son needs more playing time. And I'm like, believe me, he's 5 years old. Nobody's giving out college scholarships for at least another fucking 13 years. Like, I also wonder too. And my first question is like, hey, did you ever play any sports? And most of these parents, like, you know, their sports career ended in junior high or high school, so they have this like idea of. And I just thought it was always a. Like just a bad joke, or like maybe like just a fucking like a punchline where you're like, oh, these fucking parents. And then all of a sudden you get in and you're like, holy shit, dude, these parents are like, for me, and they're asking me, and I'm like, hey, as long as my kids have fun, because I know what it was like when we played when it wasn't fun. So I want my kids to have as much fun as possible, because one day it's not going to be fun.
Well, the way that I, you know, we have a couple kids go on and play college football, and I told them all, I said, listen, I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but this is the last time you're going to really have fun, because these kids have been playing together since they've been junior high. Like, they sleep over at each other's houses. You don't get that kind of camaraderie, especially in the NFL. I'm sure you know that. Like, it's not the same.
No.
You guys grow up together. Like, they know, you know, you get when your other, when the, your buddy's parents can yell at you and you're like, yeah, you're right. Like, that's a closeness you can't get.
And it's like the night before the game, like we would have like pasta dinners and shit at our friends' houses, and like the parents were there, and like you grew up with these kids your entire life.
And now, like, even I would say this is my, when I played was like the, really when it's, the veil was lifted off of college football as far as just being a business and just being like a factory. Does that make, you know what I'm saying? And now, like, I'd like, they're not even trying to hide it anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
well, with the
NIL.
NIL.
Yeah,
which I'm 100% for. I mean, the kids can do, it's America. Like,
then you got to give Reggie Bush back his fucking Heismans.
Yeah, that's
And like they fucking burn.
Well, first of all, I don't think anyone who's worth a shit doesn't know that Reggie Heisman wasn't the greatest fucking.
Yeah, like give me the fucking Heisman back. But I like, yeah, dude, you remember what it was like in college? Dude, we lived so far below the fucking poverty line.
Yeah,
dude, we had $740 a month was our scholarship checks. My rent was $475. My parents kicked me a few hundred extra bucks, so I had like roughly $500 a month to live on.
If my parents didn't help me out, there's no way,
dude. My mom and dad had to, and I mean, dude, they helped us with money, and like we were so far below the poverty line at the end of the month, we're like,
remember the he's usually at the end of the, and it's funny because at the beginning of the month everyone's getting new shoes. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You know you're gonna be poor at the end of the month.
Or new tattoos.
Yeah. Dude, we would go we would go to Sam's, or it was Costco or the Price Club, whatever the fuck it was called. And I would spend like $400, and it was like eggs, I'd buy rice, I'd buy all this food, and I knew that if I could, like, I had it all partitioned. Yep. And I remember one time
some asshole took like three
somebody
eggs.
Came home and ate it, and I was like, this is perfectly partitioned. I know exactly how many fucking
this
eggs.
This is May 22nd. You ate my May 22nd eggs.
I was
eggs.
So fucking mad. I was like, God damn it. I mean, I had ground beef. I had everything laid out. I had frozen chicken breasts I used to cook on the Foreman. And I had everything fucking scaled out. And I knew. And if somebody ate something, I was like, motherfucker, I'm not going to have any at the end of the month.
You know, the other thing I always, like, we didn't have a great training table at all.
Shit, we only had a training table.
One day. Well, I mean, at night, one time a day.
Yeah, we had one time a day, but we only had on nights we practiced, which was on
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
and that was it.
Yep. So, non-athlete listeners, training table referring to dinner, food, lunch versus the...
No, it's just dinner.
It just the trainers.
Just dinner.
Like the just, ACTs, the trainers.
No.
Training table is like...
Clarifying.
So the football players and the coaches, they would make... they would have a catered dinner. You would come in, at least at Cal, they would come in. When we had Boyd Epley, who was the strength coach at Nebraska, they had a fucking restaurant that was like 5-star with like a chef and people
were talking about Nebraska now.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Nebraska, Boyd Epley.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I took my trip there, we went to go eat at the we're at their training table.
Well, they also had breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
It was breakfast all year round.
Yeah.
And the farmers, and the way that they bragged, farmers would donate cows every like week. A farmer would donate a cow or this, and these
you
guys.
You and I had. Tuesday, yeah. Wednesday, Thursday, one meal, and it wasn't that good.
And these guys had like 2-inch fillets, and like I'm sitting down, we
and they're like, not this fillet, sir.
They had
that one.
They had cracked
Salisbury steak.
They had crab.
They had Lawrence Phillip.
They had crab legs. So somebody donated Alaska crab legs. So all of a sudden we sit down and we got these bitchin' steaks, and they put this huge like bushel of crab legs, and I'm like, this is your fucking training table? Like, and it was like, I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Crab legs in Nebraska.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah. Somebody flew in crab legs and for the players. And we had, and like, dude, we went there for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it was fucking phenomenal. Yeah.
You still decided not to attend.
Well, I was an idiot, right? I did not think.
You were too smart.
When you graduated?
94.
High school?
So that was
so
when
you
they were
been 95, 96, 97. I would have beat you in 98.
Yep,
at Arizona. Least you would have had 3 really good years
at Nebraska.
To put this in perspective,
they were competing for the national championship when I took
one. They won one.
Yeah, and they won. They won
2. 94, 95, 96.
Yeah.
At 96, they had 2 losses, and they were fucking hated Scott Frost. Can you imagine now if they had only 2 losses?
Yeah, they'd be unreal.
They would love Scott Frost.
That
just shows you.
I
understand how good Nebraska was in the late 80s, early 90s is unbelievable.
Dude, when I showed up, Will Shields, who I ended up playing in Kansas City, he was there. I mean, dude, the fucking guys were phenomenal in terms of offensive linemen. I did not like so I'm a white middle class kid from Southern California. I didn't know anybody that played in the NFL. It didn't really make much sense to me, and I was like, what's the average 3 years? Like, very few guys when I looked out there looked like me. So when I went to when I was looking at colleges, my deal was like, what's the best degree I can hang on the wall, because there's a good chance.
Yeah, I understand.
Like, I just never looked at it. And I remember when I was growing up, our next door neighbor was an orthopedic surgeon, a guy named Lynn Wilson. And he was like robotic smart, like photographic memory. Yeah. And my dad was really smart, photographic memory type of shit.
Make you feel like shit all the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, my dad, you grew up with a condescending asshole.
Too. I'm talking when you hang around, like the guy who built my chopper, he did it all by hand.
Oh, wow.
And his dad's an orthopedic surgeon. His brother is an actor. 2 of them went to Juilliard.
So who's this?
My buddy Will Ramsey used to train with him at Westside.
Okay.
And so, but he's like, I'm just going to start building choppers. His dad's an orthopedic surgeon. He wired an entire house to code. He's like, like opened up the book and
touch wires together. So
it made me feel like,
so my dad
only wrote
like,
a couple books.
Well, it's funny because people are always like, oh, you're kind of a smart ass and pretty quick. I'm like, well, you didn't grow up with a really smart, condescending father like I did, who was a fucking 50-year trial attorney. So my next door neighbor, who was this guy, Lynn Wilson, he had gone to Cal on an academic scholarship and played football. And so I remember my dad always telling me,
great school.
Dr. Wilson is like the smartest dude he'd ever met. And he's like, he went to Berkeley. It's all where all the really smart people go.
Yeah.
So I'd always had heard that. And then when I got a scholarship to go to Berkeley, I went out and I took a trip to Colorado, Nebraska, SC and UCLA. And I remember telling my dad, and my dad's like, you know, at the end of the day, when you go get a job or you're looking back, I'm like, I don't know, like the value of a Nebraska degree on the wall, but I'll tell you that Cal one's probably going to open some doors.
Yep.
And so I went to Berkeley for that reason. If I had known I was going to go play a decade in the NFL, I probably would have gone to Arizona State, which we went out and visited some people in Arizona State. And it was like one of those college movies, you know, you see like a Van Wilder.
You can't even put into words.
We went out there.
You can't.
It's like fucking Van Wilder. Like it was like there were these parties and they had pools in their dorms and these chicks were cruising around in bikinis. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Well, technically that was Florida State.
Dude, it's
based off of
blew my mind. And I remember thinking like, I totally chose poorly. I should have gone to these other places. This is unreal. And it was unreal.
Arizona was like very poor man's ASU.
Mm-hmm. How did you end up there to begin with?
I went to the Air Force Academy, and I fucking hated it. I absolutely hated it.
Conformist?
Oh, fucking hated it. And I made the mistake of, they run the wishbone, and I was like, man. There's anything that's more perfect for me, and I loved it.
Fullback, running back.
Yeah, and I excelled football-wise, but I hated all the other stuff. And I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I'm here to play football. I'm not here for anything else. And I'm like, what am I – like, I sat down, and I remember – this is a random – I remember those old – I'm sure they still have them. I haven't seen them. College football previews.
Yeah, magazines.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I remember I had one in my dorm at Air Force. And I remember flipping it open. I saw a picture of Ted Johnson. He was at CU. Yeah. And you remember Ted Johnson's neck?
Yeah. Oh, his neck was wider than his head.
Dude, it's unbelievable. And I remember seeing
hitting against Ted Johnson. His fucking.
Do you think he ever used his head? Dude, it's like it's the strongest part of my body.
God. It was like what was the?
You gotta see a picture of Ted Johnson.
What was in like the Daredevil comics where like the Kingpin, his like neck was like this, and his like Ted Johnson's neck was so big that his neck was actually wider than his helmet.
Yeah,
like his head tapered in. It was fucking incredible.
He's like Takeo's spikes.
Yeah,
although spikes is probably a little big, but anyway, I remember seeing a picture of him. This is back when the jerseys were awesome in college. The cutoff.
Belly,
Oh, so much
mesh.
Better.
Yeah,
you gotta remind me about the Nebraska my wife story.
Okay,
and I'll tell you this. You'll understand. So anyway, I see that, and I'm like, and I love Colorado too because it's the Big Eight. I love Nebraska growing up.
Yep.
And that people don't understand. Colorado was fucking awesome back in the day.
I took a trip there.
Eric Bieniemy and all that stuff. So,
dude, not to cut you off, but I'm a rookie in the NFL, so I'm in Kansas or Philadelphia. I go into the huddle, and all of a sudden, Eric Bieniemy is our running back, and I like see him, and I remember Eric Bieniemy like playing for Colorado, and I remember seeing the, and I'm like, holy shit, it's Eric Bieniemy. I was like, what's up, Q? So I remember I called my brother that night. I was like, dude, I was in the huddle with Eric Bieniemy. And my brother was like, they were doing all this stuff. Like, oh my God, dude. Yeah.
Anyway, I saw, remember seeing that picture of Ted Johnson. And I was like, that's what I want. Because ever since I've been a kid, that's all I want to do is play college football. I could give a shit about the NFL. It was just, there's something about the drums. You know what I'm talking about? The drum corps when you're coming out and, just the everything to me was awesome. And hearing who's that famous announcer? Jackson. Nelly. College football announcer. Come on. Keith Jackson.
Oh, Keith Jackson.
It's just everything, was Saturdays, like we didn't have cable growing up, so you'd get like two games. You'd always get fucking Notre Dame. Oh.
Yeah. For us it was SC was on all the time. It's fucking awful.
So and then, you might get anyway. So I just left, and at that time, Arizona had the swarm defense. Yes.
Yeah. Oh fuck, dude.
And the year prior, they had
the flex defense.
Oh my God,
Jesus!
People they gave up 18 inches of rush. Dude, 94.
Teddy Bruschi, right? So they had a dude named Rob Waldrop.
Rob Waldrop was the Outland Trophy winner.
Outland Trophy winner. He used to play, right? This was their defense, right? He played a three technique, but he was standing straight up.
No, Waldrop wasn't.
Oh wait, okay, no. Teddy Bruschi was the flex.
Teddy was a DN. They had a flex guy. Ooh.
I thought it was Rob Waldrop was the flex.
No,
it was the weirdest defense. The three technique was standing like a yard off the line in a 2-point, And but the problem was everybody would try to run at the flex, but Rob Waldrop, who was just a fucking savage.
He's like 5'11", 285. His thighs were like this big.
And he, dude, he had like a get off that was like, I think he ran like, let's say he ran like a 4.8, but he ran like a,
1.210.
Yeah. Yeah. His 10 was like 0.2. Like it was like his acceleration. He used to just hit people and launch them. He won the Outland Trophy. He was a fucking savage. Like, I remember watching him on film and being like, oh God.
Yeah. He's So that was in 94. That's when they beat Miami 29-0. And that was Miami. Like that was.
Oh, yeah. When they showed up in like battle fatigues.
Yeah.
I mean, that was Jimmy Johnson, Miami.
Yeah. Well, not that year.
No, but that was like they still had that swagger where they would show up in fucking fatigues and that whole deal.
Uzis.
And, oh, yeah. It's fucking lawless.
But the next year they played Georgia Tech in a bowl game and they started a white running back. And I was like, they give us chances. Like, you know how hard it's difficult to get a chance if you're a skill position and you're a white dude, unless you're a tight end. And so I never was interested in Arizona until I saw the it was Kevin Schmicke, ended up being a really good friend of mine, but I get home to Chicago area and it's like, you know, I'd spent unloaded semi trucks. Anyway, I went to go visit a couple schools because my dad's like, listen, you walk on, I'll pay for whatever it is. This is your dream. As long as you don't fuck up. And, you know, so we went to visit a couple different schools and I chose Arizona. And it was one of those like, just see what he says. He's like, all right, Arizona. I was like, oh man, it's like asking your wife for a threesome. Like, yeah, we're just joking. Yeah. Oh, really?
Nice. Cool with this? Oh, I didn't see that one coming.
So we went in to make a long. I flew out there and it was 80 degrees, palm trees everywhere. And I had just flown. It was like 20 below.
Where are you from originally?
Just outside of Chicago, like 20 miles northwest of Chicago. Okay. So it's fucking horrible.
What's the town?
Town is Prospect Heights. There's like a million, like that area is like 7 million people.
Yeah.
It's so congested. It's northwest suburbs of Chicago. Okay. The Schaumburg and Arlington Heights, all these, there's whatever. So after I get back, you know, I have to make a decision and I'm like, I'm going to Arizona. My dad's like, thank God. Like,
yeah, get the fuck out of here.
Well, he's like, now I can go visit you in Arizona. You know, it's warm there. And so I ended up going there and I walked on and I ended up got a scholarship. I ended up having Graves' disease. I don't, not a lot of people know that, but I don't have a thyroid anymore. My thyroid was so hyperactive that I couldn't gain weight. I'd sleep every other day. And it was one of those things, and you probably understand, like, oh, I'm just not eating. I'm not training hard. Yeah. So, but I didn't know, like, my thyroid was so, resting heart rate was 130. Huh. And now you'd be like, oh, shit, but you think I'm checking my heart rate? You know, when you're 18 years old or I was 19. So anyway, once they got that done, I gained, it was like my body in 3 months said, hey, you know, every weight you lifted since you've had this, it's coming, buddy. And I was 240 pounds. My bench went, because when you have severe hyperthyroidism, your body eats itself. Mm-hmm. And I would just get weaker and weaker and weaker. And it was just, again, I guess I'm not training hard enough. And I think that the first day of my treatments, I benched like 225 for like 5 reps. And 3 months later, I did 400 for 2.
Nice.
3 months.
Yeah.
But it would be Monday I would bench and Thursday I'd bench. And I'd break a PR from Monday to Thursday, and then like Monday, it was fucking awesome. But it was like every rep I've ever done just went, burr, burr. And my doctor's like, dude, he was like, you taking steroids? Come on, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know, are you really cool? Are you a narc or something? Yeah. But I wasn't.
You're like, are you offering?
That's right. I'm willing to test some stuff out. But it ended up being the best decision of my life because I got a scholarship. I got to play on some good teams. And my wife and I were joking because we had seen a video today of like I don't know what 2012 NFL class of wide receivers or whatever. I don't remember what it was. And it was, I think they had 5 receivers and only one was okay. One guy got cut. A first round draft pick got cut after a year.
Yeah, that's awful.
Never played again.
Yeah.
And I was telling her, you know, by my last 2 years I was at Arizona, cause I played for an extra year. I had to petition the NCAA, but I got an extra year because of the hyperthyroidism, the Graves' disease, which is the worst name for a fucking disease ever, by the way.
Yeah.
It's named after the doctor that discovered it. But come on, dude, name it after his first name, like Don or something. Because it sounds like when they told me, like, dude, you got Graves' disease.
You're like, oh, I'm fucking dead.
That's what I thought, right? I mean, my last 2 years, you know, we'd always have these new crop of All-Americans come in. And I remember like my first couple of years, I was like, oh man, like I'm never going to see the field. And my last year is like, I don't care. Like they might put you on the depth chart ahead of me for two games, you know, to make you feel good, but I'm going to play over you every time.
Yeah.
Explain the feeling that you had when they announced like you earned your scholarship.
Well, you know, when I, like my dad and I are incredibly close and we're just like my oldest son and I, like we share football and my dad made a tremendous, I mean, paying for college then is not like paying for college now, but it's still a sacrifice. And he came to every single fucking game I ever played in, even if it was just special teams. He's like, I'm, you know, so he traveled all, remember they're in Illinois. You know, we never played, you know, west of the Mississippi at all. So, it was the best feeling. It just, and I wasn't just happy for me, even though obviously it's a very selfish thing. It was just, I felt like my dad, like won. I'm getting, sorry.
No, man. My dad passed away, 4 years ago. He passed away on the 28th. So 2 days ago, it's been 4 years. And my dad, came to almost every single game, and the games that he didn't come to, I flew him out to.
Yeah.
And it was always amazing to come out and see my dad and like after every game. And like he would like I remember, at training camp, it was like, I think it was early in the season, like the coaches had new outfits. And so my dad was like, hey, I think I could get one of those coaches' shirts. And so I went to our equipment guy and I was like, hey, man, I slipped him a couple $100. Yeah. And I was like, hey, can you get my dad one of those outfits? So he got him the pants, he got him the shirt, the shoes, gave him like the whole fucking.
I hope the guy went on the field and started yelling at some motherfucker.
So I give it to him. He's so excited. He wears it to the game. So after the game, he and my mom comes down. He just walked right past and he's like down in the locker room, all right, looking like the coach. So he used to
fucking. You see him doing an interview with ESPN Deportes.
He's totally hanging out. And so people like Runyon's like, hey, Mr. Welborn, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm just hanging out. And so the hilarious part was.
On the team?
Yeah. And so then it became like every year. The equipment guy would like roll over and he would like put my dad's outfit and I would just like, I mean, at Christmas, I give him like a grand. I always kick him dough. Cause those guys are the way that shit, like they keep the greasy wheels going. You want some, you always want to keep those guys greased.
They're like the garbage men in that. If you don't think garbage men are important.
Oh yeah. They'll fuck you. So like I like saw him and I would like, here's an envelope of money. I'm like, dude, my dad is excited and I'm excited. So I would roll in. And so my dad had these outfits and, he was my biggest fan, man. So, I mean, I know. And I mean, he was 4 years ago the other day. So he was 80. He lived an amazing life. He, didn't work out, didn't worry about what he ate, worked his ass off. Wow. Fucking
lived to 80 and
lived to 80. Yeah. The only thing he didn't do was smoke because that's dirty. But
cigarettes.
We would go to restaurants and my brothers and I would like play like a little game. We'd be like, whatever the worst thing on the menu is, that's what dad's going to get. He's like, oh, that that deep fried pork butt, bring that one over.
Fettuccine Alfredo with extra lard.
And
a hot cup of fat.
Dude, it's the best. I'll tell you, and I tell my son this every day, there isn't a single day that doesn't go by that I don't think about my dad and I don't wish I could call him.
Yep.
And that's why I come home and I hug my little boy all the time. And I'm like, hey, man, like it's you're my surrogate.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and it's so cool that here you are at, you know, like years later that you're looking back and you're like, look at the sacrifice or just the fact that your dad busted his ass to come to every fucking game.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, the other thing is my dad was a AD and a teacher at my school in high school. So and my dad probably says 6-7 words a year, you know, just a real quiet guy. And he's always, he was never my coach. Cause he's like, he coached football for years and he's like, it's no thanks. I'm done with this shit. And, but he always, whenever I wanted the weight room open, which was a lot because, I trained so much when I was in high school, but he, all right, here we go. He didn't care. He drove me over. Like I didn't have my driver's license until I was 17. And the hill that, one of the Walter Payton Hills, it was, when you live there, everything's like a fucking pain in the ass to get to because of traffic. But he'd just get in the truck and he'd drive me and just sit in the truck or just hang out and count the hills. And It's funny because a lot of the kids in high school, I remember this, like, you're only strong because your dad opens the weight room. I'm like, dude, I'll call you every time I go in. And you guess how many people actually show up.
Man, dude, this is fucking hilarious, but I told the story like it was weird. Like I was fast and then I grew a bunch and I wasn't fast.
Yeah.
And it was fucking bothered me.
Yeah.
So I went to the library and I went and I checked out books on speed.
Yeah.
And like literally like Dewey Decimal System, the whole deal. Cause right. Cause the library, cause who else am I going to call? So I go and I check out this book and I remember the only thing I gleaned from the book was downhill running.
That was a big thing. You know, what used to do is Corey Everson. You remember the bodybuilder?
Yeah.
She was a great track sprinter at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
They used to pull her with a moped.
And I'm for like, overspeed.
Boy, that doesn't sound like a great idea.
No, you just fucking go down. They keep dragging you. So I rode around my bike. So I wasn't old enough to drive yet. And so I rode around on my bike and I finally found this like grade that was on. So I went out and there I was doing this downhill running.
Yeah.
And a bunch of like my buddies pulled up and like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm getting faster, you know? And then like years later, man, like I remember when we trained at old man Zangus's house, which is another whole fucking disaster. But my dad would drop me off at 9 a.m. But the old power lifters would train first.
Yep.
And our job was to rack their weights.
Yep.
And then when they got done, and I remember like 2 or 3 hours later, my dad shows up and he's like this. I'm like, I haven't lifted yet. And he's like, just waves it, right? I'm 14 years old. He drops me off at some weird old Greek guy's house, right? I've been there for 3 hours racking weights, and I'm like, I haven't lifted
yet. You're all sweaty, like, you're getting a good workout. I haven't lifted yet. I haven't
done anything. And then finally, they're like, you guys are up. And it's like 1 o'clock, and my dad just waves and just drives away. And I'm like, first of all, I wouldn't drop my kids off at some weird old Greek guy's house. And like, after 3 hours, I come in and be like, what the fuck are we doing here? And my dad's like, you'll be fine. I'll be back. And like, just, I'm like, holy shit, dude.
It's hilarious. It was an awesome time in my life. And when my last year, I had already graduated. So I was in technically grad school. And when I was at the academy and stuff, I was, you're up at 4:35 a.m. doing whatever. And so when I got to Arizona, my first class was at 9 a.m. And I was like, oh my God, this is fucking awesome. Like I get to sleep till 9, you know, to whatever, 7:30 and
8:55.
Yeah. Well, I would always wake up early and eat and I had a paper route for 3 years and then it was 365 days a year. You had to get up at 5 every morning. So I was used to this. My last year I was in grad school and then I only took 2 classes. That's full time in grad school. So I had class Monday night. We didn't have practice. You didn't have practice.
Yeah, we didn't practice Monday.
And Tuesday night. So I had Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. I was lamenting on Monday. Like my class was at 4. I'm like, really? 4? That's how spoiled I got.
Yeah.
Who do you think I am? Like getting up before noon. Bullshit. I remember talking to my dad because I'm not gonna lie to my dad. I'm like, listen, I'll be honest with you, man. I'm not really trying too hard. And he's like, even especially the last semester when we're not playing, I just took 100 level courses. I'm like, I don't give a fuck about anything. I just couldn't wait to get out of school. I was 23 at the time.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
So he's like, listen, stay in school. Just enjoy everything because real life sucks.
Yeah.
And he's like, once you have to get a job and have to grind it out a little bit. But he was like, dude, live it up. He was never like, getting down on me for having fun and having a great time. And I always remember that. He's like, dude, enjoy it, man.
I remember
every minute of it.
I would come home from practice and, we're like, by the time we get done with practice, watch film, ate whatever, it was fucking late. And I was always super tired. And I came home and remember my dad called me and I'm like, dad, I'm super tired. I don't have time. I feel too tired to study and do a good job. And he's like, what you should do is you should come home, go right to bed and then wake up at like 4 a.m. and study. And I was like, that's a great fucking idea. So I take a shower, I go to bed, and like I'm laying there at 4 a.m., the phone rings.
It's your old
it's
man,
my
isn't
dad.
It?
And he's like, hey, just calling to make sure you're up. You said you were going to study. And I'm like, I'm up. You know, this is pre-cell phone. So it like rings in the house. And I'm like, hello. And he's like, just calling to make sure you're up. And I'm like, no problem, dad. Okay, cool. So we talk for a few minutes. I hang up and I lay back down.
Oh, there
you go. And like literally like 6 minutes later, ring. Did you go back to sleep? And I'm like, does he have a camera in here? And I'm up. He proceeded to call me pretty much every morning at 4 a.m. for like the rest of college. So my dad was an early riser. Like he would come home, go to sleep, that's wake awesome. Up early, and he would call, and we would like to we would talk. He'd be like, "What are you working on?" And I'd be like, "Oh, I'm writing this thing on McCarthyism. I got this." And he would be like, "Hey, I read this book," and we would have these like epic conversations. Yeah. And man, he like it was the type of thing where if I was driving in the car, I always called my dad. Like first
that's
thing
how,
in the morning.
That's how my oldest son is.
Yeah,
he's like, "I'm driving home from school. What's going on?" I'm like, "Man, you know."
I would still to this day when we moved to Texas, I would always get up early on Saturday morning and go to Home Depot and Tractor Supply, wherever I got to go to get the shit done. And I would always call him first thing in the morning. And you know, like I would go at like 7, and I knew this fucker would be up at 5 a.m. because Texas is 2 hours ahead of time. I call first ring, hello. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, just hanging out. And he's like, oh, I'm just getting a little reading in, like doing some stuff. And I'd be like, is mom up? He's like, no, she's being lazy. So my dad had a deal. If they're like, you slept past 6 o'clock, you're lazy. To the point
you're
where my mom
daylight. Is. Yeah.
To this day, like I'll call my mom and she's like, oh, I was real lazy today. I slept until 6 o'clock. And he was just, yeah, it's a really interesting thing. Like it's, yeah, man, like, but like, I like at the end of the day, like you have these amazing stories where you tell people and you're like, there's no way anybody would believe this. If I could call me at 4 a.m. every morning.
That's
and then
awesome.
It was funny because I like, you know, I had a girlfriend sleep over and they would be like, yeah. Is your dad really going to call him like clockwork? He never misses. If he says he's going to do it, he's going
to
do
listen,
it. Like,
honey, I got 5 minutes to make you happy.
5 minutes. After, what are we going to do for the other three?
Minutes, too many. After, yeah.
Last part of the massage. Yeah. I'll snooze. Anything after that's your fault.
Oh shit! All right, so
Jim, when did it transition into coaching?
Yeah,
was it the end of the athletic career, or was it later down the road?
When I my last game was at we're talking about Arizona State was at Arizona State on that Thanksgiving. It was a Friday, I think. So
what do they call that when you guys play? It doesn't have like something like
border. Oh shit!
Yeah, they got some name for it.
It's the oh my god, the Civil War.
Yeah.
No. Something like that. I don't know. But man, we got 1 year. It was so violent that I mean, there's bench clearing brawls. We had one guy, his foot turned around because he got cheap shotted on a play. This was when Jake Plummer was there. They killed us that year.
But
it was
good.
It was bench clearing shit.
He was pretty good.
Yeah, it was so
they
bad
called him a
that
snake
they
for
had
a
to call the mayors of Tempe and Tucson came together and said, "Listen, we have to have some kind of pact here that you know we're gonna calm everyone down and stuff." That's how bad it was. So I remember the year that Plummer was there. I remember I was walking by some dorms and the signs were up in the window like "I fucked Jake Plummer's mom." Like some of the most vile shit. And I was like, oh my God. So I don't think I've ever told you this story. I got dressed. We're in our home stadium. So we dressed in our regular locker room. We have to walk across the street to the field and I'm walking out, you know, running backs come out at whatever time. And I'm with one of my buddies and we're just talking. I had my helmet on and some lady must've been 50 years old, middle age. She grabs my shirt. She's like, "You fucking asshole. Fuck you." And, you know, kind of did this and ran away. And I was like, did you, it was like, if you saw like a unicorn, it would take a good 30 seconds to process that you fucking saw a pink unicorn or something. Like,
it would have
shit.
Been better story if she grabbed me and I punched her in the face. Yeah. And, but the good thing there was no social media cause nobody saw anything.
It was so fucked up. And I was like, my God, it was awesome though. I love that kind of stuff. And my first time playing against ASU was at ASU. And you had to wear your helmets out because you would get tagged with full beer cans. You'd always get pelted with shit.
When we would come through, like you remember, like the dressing room was underneath the bleachers.
Yeah.
And when they came through, they would tell you, hey, wear your helmets because they're going to throw shit at you. And so like I remember walking out and literally like Coke's fucking raining on us, beer bottles and the whole shit.
It
and you're
was
like,
bananas.
Yeah, that was fucking.
Oh, I fucking loved that. It was just it was fun. And that's, you know, that's. We had some insane games against them. And so my final game was at ASU. Anyway, so that was on Friday. By Sunday, I was 100% powerlifting ready. because I don't want to exist in the past. It just makes me sick. And I'm like, I'm not going to be one of that guys. So I was already, you know, programmed out everything I wanted to do. And then I got I had worked as a personal trainer at a place in Tucson. And then I got a offer to go to Lexington. One of the old coaches from Arizona. So got the head job at the University of Kentucky. So I went there and I was there for 2 years. And it was a horrible eye opener for me. And it's an SEC school. So my expectations were super fucking high. And my first day that I was there coaching, I called my dad crying. Cause I'm like, this is fucking horse shit. Like, cause I love training. I'm like, you love training. I love training. And that's the only thing that ever got me from point A to point B in football. It just was I'll train you a little bit more. And the technique was horrible. The programming was horrible. The expectations were so fucking low that it made me sick. Mm. And I'm like, we're not curing cancer here, but we're also important. Everyone's important. Whatever job you do is fucking important. And I always tell people, if you don't think it's important, go to McDonald's and have them fuck up your order at the drive-thru and see how mad you are.
Yeah.
You know, so everyone's important. So I'm thinking like I may not be good at a lot of stuff, but I'm good at this. And so from then on, my dad's like, you have to have your standards and your principles. You have to stick to that shit. And if they don't like it, that's fine. And so when it became a kind of a shit fest, because the way it would be, I don't know how we didn't lift like this at Arizona, but maybe we'd have a group of 20 guys come into the weight room at once from the football team. And there's four coaches, you get four, you know, he gets four, and I'm responsible for those to take them through everything. And I'd always have that same group every day. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, listen, I took each group aside. I'm like, listen, do you guys want to do shit right? I mean, I'm talking fucking right now. All your numbers are going to go down. Your butts can't come off the bench. You're going to have to squat to depth. We're going to look at, you know, just everything. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, not a single guy said no. Because I'm like, listen, your squat's going to go way down. I mean, right? You versus a full squat. And what ended up happening was the other group said, well, why is Coach Wendler doing this shit with these guys? Why, you know, because I'm on my hands and knees like fucking high. It's fucking high. And they would take great pride in it. And that makes the other coaches look a little shitty. Yeah. And then honestly, I was totally horribly immature about a lot of stuff just because I was, you know, 25 years old or so. And
a bit of arrogance, bravado. But that's important.
Yeah. Because if I didn't believe what I was doing, like people always like, do you ever question them? If I questioned, I wouldn't be here. Like then I would be doing something else, like whatever I thought was right. And I'm not saying like there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, but I believe in what I do. And if you see how our team plays and you see the difference versus every other team, even my dad, I got to tell you the Nebraska story again. Remind me.
All right. Well,
my dad for the first time said, not for the first time, but he's like, you guys look like football players. Uh-huh. And that was the greatest compliment. He's like, not everyone, you're going to get the fat kids and like the normal kids looking. But our kids, like, all got even my wife, when she saw the kids for the first time, she's like, they all had giant traps and huge asses and thighs.
Yeah.
And she's like, they all look like you. Like, well, when I used to look big. And, but anyway, with the Nebraska thing. So my wife never really watched football. I mean, she knew about it until she met me. So
where's she from?
New Jersey.
Oh, she's from New Jersey. Yeah, North Jersey, South Jersey?
Fuck if I
know. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's like two different states.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, if you would have given me any state like New York, New Jersey, and like the Boston area, I would like, I don't want any woman from there.
Yeah.
and she ended up being like, absolutely perfect for me. But, so I turn on as a, so this was right, like in the first year we were together and I turn ESPN and it's a ESPN Classics game. It's 95 Nebraska. Hmm. And my wife has no idea it's 95 Nebraska. She thinks it's just a football game. And so she sits down and she's like, who is this team? There's no one fat. Everyone's fucking strong and built.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy, this is a complete outsider, not realizing this was, 30 years ago?
Every one of those dudes had fucking arms.
Yeah.
Like,
And everyone remembered the tops,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Hey, dude,
they had a little roll.
Yeah.
Little roll.
But everybody had a little bit of just like,
just enough to be 18, 19, 20%.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was the biggest eye opener because we're talking about the O lineman and stuff. And, so that's when I really started looking. I listened to a bunch of stuff that Boyd Epley and Mike Arthur did, because Mike Arthur is really the architect of their metabolic circuits.
Yeah.
And Boyd Epley's like, I'll never forget this. He's like, he started off his seminar and said, what is your goal as a strength coach? And, you know, no one wants to raise their hand. It's fucking Boyd Epley. I was on an elevator with him one time and all I could stare was his fucking hair. He's got like a hair helmet. It's like Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
And
he's bald like, now.
Who, Boyd?
Was he bald?
No. Boyd
Epley? He still had it.
Just gets shorter.
Yeah, it just gets shorter. Yeah, it used to. So I took a trip there and I met Boyd and then we did a podcast with him recently.
Okay.
And it was like, it's fucking like, it was awesome.
So I watched this and he's like, to be better football player. He's like, come on, like in the weight room. Like, don't be stupid. And it's like, my goal is not to get the kids hurt. Well, that's everyone's goal, right? So he's like, the goal is to put muscle on them. A bigger, stronger muscle will move faster and run in speed and agility.
And durability.
Now, yeah. So everything. Yeah. Now, of course, there's a point of diminishing returns. But basically, once I realized that, training became very simple for the kids. And I always say, like, our main lifts are for just, we want power, especially lower body. We're just looking at perfection of technique and power. Just apply force to the bar. And then everything else is just, we're going to do good calisthenics because, again, the GPP of athletes is so fucking low now. I am basically a PE teacher who teaches them how to lift.
Yeah.
And
that general physical preparedness, man. I mean, Louis's been writing about that shit for 50 years.
I can go on about that, but...
why? Because he's the only one that didn't need the conditioning.
Well, listen, GPP, you have to change levels. And I'll give it meaning you have to go from the ground to up. It's not pulling a sled. Pulling a sled is not going to do anything. You need to be doing jumping jacks, four count burpees, mountain climbers, push-ups, sit-ups. Dragging a sled is good, but that's a mass. That's just one part of this big thing.
Sure.
But when I started really realizing, listen, I just got to put muscle on these kids, because when you get them, you got kids who got, their shoulder blades, wings. Sticking out. I'm like, who cares about their starts when they can't even do 20 chin-ups? Like, that's the, and I tell them, our special.
The biggest goal is you want to be able to fill out,
I tell them, we're going to win the battle of the jersey. Bus. I said, when we walk off that bus, I want to win.
Yeah.
Fuck the score. We want to look good.
One, you want to fill out your jersey, and two, you want people to actually know you lift weights and to fucking play football.
Yes.
Like, let me get some receipts out of this bitch.
Yep. And that's that, and the kids love it because, like, we're getting all pumped up, but we still, like, the main lifts and stuff, the bench, squat, and trap bar, I really work on speed and power and understanding, you know, being aggressive. And then everything else, I'm like, you know, we do a lot of body weight stuff. For high reps, we do, I mean, obviously all the upper body stuff, some box jumps and a lot of jumping. But the bottom line is once I realized, you know, what Boyd Epley was doing, it was like everything made sense. And then, you know, of course, you get a couple coaches come in or parents like, why aren't we doing more overspeed training? I'm like, dude, a kid can't do 50 pushups. I'm like, who wants to line up against a motherfucker who can't do 50 pushups in high school? And I use the bare minimum standards for special forces, because first of all, you ever look at those, you're not getting the special forces doing the bare minimum, like,
sure,
you know, 60 sit-ups or something, like, or whatever it is. It's not very much. So that's what we use. I'm like, listen, until you get there, we get nothing special. And the best thing is we win. So everyone buys in. And so what ended up happening was, after, like, I think the second or third year I was there, then we had some eighth graders like, hey, do you think we can lift? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Problem is there's nothing more destructive in the world than junior high kids. Nothing. Nagasaki, Hiroshima, not even fucking close. And so now the problem is that I had to keep my eye on these fucking ding-dongs when I got my assholes over here. And these are the kids I need. These are going to play next year. So for about, I don't know, 4 months, I would come home just screaming to my wife, like, you don't even fucking run down. And I told the head coach.
Dweebs.
What?
They're dweebs.
Oh, just fucking dweebs. Driving me bananas.
They're like ding dongs, John.
Yeah. Well, dweebs, like dorks. Yeah. Dweebs. Nerds.
So eventually what ended up happening, I just like, listen, I can't do this anymore because these are the kids who bring us the money here. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like the kids are
the proverbial money.
And these kids also had been since freshman, sophomore, like they deserve the best I got and they're not getting it because you cannot take your eye off these kids. And so to make a long story short, my wife's like, fine, I'll fucking do it for a little bit. Nice. And that ended up being like once or twice a week just to get the kids. And now it's full bore. And now, can you guess what happened to our junior high teams?
Now all of a sudden they're doing better too.
Fucking, yeah. And anyone that plays another sport, you can tell. The good thing is we've, this is the head coach. This has nothing to do with me. They put the foot down. Like, you play football, you train with us. And then you can play other sports, but you're getting your shit done here. No other sport really has the year-round training system that we have. And, but anyway, it's been, that's been the, you know, I never thought I'd be here. And we volunteer too. That's the reason why, because they're like, we'll pay you $2,000. I'm like, listen, I don't want $2,000. Like, first of all, I don't need the money. And second of all, that means you can tell me what to do.
Yeah. The minute that you start paying me, there's entitlement. Now I'm going to volunteer and I'm going to tell you to go fuck yourself.
So, and then what ends up happening is it just gives me a lot more power. And I like saying, I say no all the time to stuff. You know, I don't. So it's kind of nice because I feel like the parents have always, I don't really had any problems with the parents, but they've been incredibly supportive. And the kids generally like me because I'm nice, relatively, because the head coach is that old school. He's younger than me, but he's the old school, you'll motherfuck you to death, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm generally fairly positive with the kids, and I don't like to yell.
I think it's because you played.
Yeah.
Like for me, like I don't like to motherfuck people. And, you know, it like
these kids, some of these kids need it though.
Yeah. Like I think at the point, like for me personally, like I can explain to you what to do. If I got to like fucking use harsh words and break a foot off in your ass to get you motivated, you probably shouldn't be here.
Yeah. That's the other hard part is, the kids don't know what it takes. And it's funny because I'll be talking to some of the seniors and some of the freshmen will come up like, oh my God, you talk like this to the kids? I'm like, I don't fucking care. Like, I mean, it's so much shit talking I'm telling these kids. And
the freshmen are saying this?
Yeah, they're like,
I'm going to punch you in your throat if you tell anybody.
Oh, I'll tell you off air what one of our seniors did to one of our freshmen. It was one of the best signs of leadership I've ever seen in my life. The nice. Kid never opened his fucking mouth again.
Good.
But it's funny because obviously a lot of kids come through and once the kids understand what we're doing, everything just, all the little shit just goes away in their head. Like, okay, I understand. Like, I don't care that you've lowered my numbers. I understand we're looking for power. My speed wasn't good.
But like at the end of the day, like, you know, like you never stop. Like when you played, did anybody ever ask you what you benched on the field?
No, no one cares. No.
And like, it doesn't matter.
Ironically, whenever our kids go to like combines, fucking blow everyone out of the water. And they're like, what do you max? The coach won't let us. We don't want to max.
Yeah, 5 RMs. Yeah. I built my life on 5 RMs. I mean, it's a really interesting culture where, you know, the weight room was always a vehicle to get you to fucking victory and to be successful. And, you know, you got to assemble the best vehicle you can. So it has to be intelligent. And that's when I talk to people about like, whether it be programming or training, I'm like, you wouldn't fucking not balance your tires. You wouldn't like, if we're going to go on a long trip, like make sure you got packed, you got snacks, like look at it the same way. Like, do you have the ability to get as far as you want? Can your car fucking run? Is it broken down? Yeah. Did you do this? Like, it's the same analogy for everything. Like if you want to go long, you got to have all your shit fucking figured out. You got to be smart. And like, I think so many people are so fly by night that it just doesn't make sense.
Well, the other thing, we train 50 weeks out of the year too, which gives me a tremendous amount of flexibility. Like, listen, guys, we're all dragging ass. Like, I'm tired. I know you're fucking tired. So let's just be smart today. And then we run, as long as the weather's good, we run year round. Now we don't run a lot. We run 10 50s, but you run 10 50s for 4 months. So by the time we need to up the running, no one's strength drops off.
Yeah.
So it's
and you guys are running like max effort type stuff, like actual like sprinting.
We do a lot. Well, we do a lot of sprint conditioning.
Gotcha.
We don't do a lot of speed work because the way I look at that is, one, I'm not terribly knowledgeable about speed. I have 60 kids out there. I got kids who, I had a kid, I'm not joking, you know, where he couldn't jump three long jumps to cover 5 yards. Think about that for
great,
a second.
Great, let's go sprint fucking hundreds.
Yeah, so like we just do a lot of anything that takes about 5 to 6 seconds, we do a lot of. So that's about the time of the football play. And we do everything in sets. So instead of saying, I know you were there, we're running 30 20s today. You're like, fuck. Yeah. I'm like, listen, we're going to do sets of five.
Yeah.
And we're going to go take a 2 minute break that so you can stomach that, right?
Yeah.
Coach fucking.
Yeah.
So it ends up being just like a game or like a practice. You're never going to be running. So once I started understanding running, like, listen, we're going to do it in pockets. I want effort. And I said, you know what? It's your team too. If you want to suck and be out of shape, that's kind of on you guys. Cause you know, I can only hold your hand for so long.
Sure.
But we do it most, and we do prowler work every Friday, as long as the weather's good. And that is more of a team builder. And it's funny because when I went to Florida one time, my head coach was like, listen, this is how you do the prowlers. And he's like, no one ever throws up when you're coaching. I'm like, yeah, because I monitor everything while I'm out there. It's not like I have heart rate monitors. I can look. I can see the kids' reaction. So I'm driving. I'm in like the fucking Everglades of Florida. We're driving, and I get a phone call from the head coach. He's like, there's like 10 guys puking right now. How do you fucking do this? He's like, I try to follow your direction. I'm like, you just got to look. If the kid's feeling like shit, you got to back off a little bit.
Well, especially with that prowler flu. I think was it you that wrote about it? I remember somebody wrote about it.
I was the first person to push that prowler, and I can tell you some fucked up, because I didn't know. Like, it's like everyone, like, take that.
We didn't know either.
First guy who shot heroin is like, oh, my God. Oh, well, boy.
Well, like, when we start pushing the prowler, and then all of a sudden you see people go ghostly white. And like all of a sudden they start like kind of woozing, and you're like, oh, they're either going to take a header or fucking puke. And we did it. I mean, we got that prowler and pushed it till we fucking couldn't stand anymore.
I remember one of my best friends in high school came out to visit me, and he was a wrestling coach, and he wrestled with the kid. So he was in still phenomenal shape. He was like, hey, what's this deal with the prowler? I'm like, hey, let's push the prowler one day. So this was during work hours at Elite FTS. We went out and we bid like, I don't know, 1040s or something, whatever. I don't remember what it was. It doesn't matter. I drove him back home. And I said, here's the remote controls. I got to go back to work. I'll be back in 4 hours or whatever it was. It was a couple hours. And like, you know, this is because you know how hard it is to run someone else's TV.
Yeah.
It's fucking impossible.
Yeah. Like hacking the Matrix.
Yeah. And so I come home and he's literally in the same fucking spot. No TV on. Just sitting there like that. And I was like,
so tired.
Jimmy, dude, what's going on? He's like, dude, I haven't moved.
Man.
And it was, you know, maybe 12, 15 minutes. And I'm like, he's like, dude, that thing. And we sent something to DeFranco. We did a seminar up in New Jersey, and he loved the sled, like the regular sled. And I was like, Joe, we got this thing called the prowler. And he's like, I don't know. And rightfully so, because, you know, he's not a gimmick kind of guy. And I'm like, I'll tell you what, we'll send you two. You let me know on Tuesday. He calls me up. He's like, holy shit. Holy shit. The fucking sled's stupid. Yeah. And, but this stuff needs to be taught. Like, you know, we talk about general physical preparedness and stuff, but when our kids run, especially like the prowler stuff, especially, you cannot put your hands on your hips. And it's not because the oxygen is better. It's just look fucking tough.
Dude,
being stronger than the next guy.
Or at least fooling the next guy into thinking you're not tired.
And that's fine, because guess what? I'm fucking tired too when I do this. And I live in a very small town. I push the prowler in a half mile. I have a half mile course, and there's kids drive by, parents drive by. I make sure I never hunch over. And if I do, I'm like, God.
Hiding behind a tree.
I'm coaching high schoolers, and that's the biggest lesson. Don't look tired.
Yeah. It's like old Sun Tzu. When you're at your weakest, look your strongest. When you're strongest, look the weakest. So but when you have that style of offense, it transforms your entire program, because the attitude changes. I remember asking an old coach, I'm like, why does Texas Tech fucking blow on defense? This was a guy who was like 70 years old. I'm like, why does Oklahoma State blow on? Why does every Big 12 team blow on deep? Why does everyone who runs that kind of wide open? He's like, I don't really know, but I can tell you this. If you have a hard-nosed offense, the whole team gets hard-nosed. Because I always thought it was defense, but it seems like that, if your offense is tough, it just resounds with the whole team. And so having that style of offense transforms the way we train. Because honestly, if you run in that spread wide, well, how strong do you need to be to pitter-patter? And now we, like, the kids understand, hey, we're running, like, I need to bulldoze. Now that trap bar makes sense. Now that prowler makes sense. Now I know why I'm doing extra trap work.
Well, I mean, shit, dude, you're coming off the ball, and it makes the assignment really easy.
Yeah, like we got.
We used to call that a cat. We used to call it basically like a cat defense, where you're like line up. You're like, I got this cat, you got that cat, yeah, and I got that cat.
Yep,
it's real fucking simple. So what would happen was, if we would come up to the line and there was a defense that we had never seen, we'd just start calling cats. I got this cat, you got that cat, I got this cat. And it was...
Hey, don't twist! Yeah.
And it was funny because we'd be like, oh, what are they playing? They were in a cat defense. And that was our code name for we didn't know what the fuck they were doing, so we're just going to block some motherfucker. And you know what? We might get the wrong dude.
We'll all step to the left and hope we get someone. Yeah. Whoever crosses. Yeah,
it'll be fine. It'll be good.
But, you know, it's awesome, too, because that style of offense, our guards are incredibly quick. So you can put a fairly small guy at guard as long as he's willing to pull and take someone's fucking head off. If you're willing to put some, and I always tell the kids, like, we got a lot of small kids. I'm like, listen, if you're willing to put your head through someone's sternum, we will play you. There will be a spot. And dude, you'll go at tackle for all we give a shit about. I don't care if you're 180. If you're willing to, because if you're, you know, let's say you're the guy I'm playing against, you're going to lean on me for three plays. You're not going to beat a tough son of a 180-pound guy who's, you know, like a little wrestler. He's going to get the leverage on you. He's going to out-train you, outwork you. I'm not saying you personally, but you know what I'm saying? The big guys in high school, everyone gets obsessed with size. And it's like, go ahead and lean on me for two plays.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're running a wing T, I mean, size isn't really much of a matter.
No,
I mean,
the other thing
it's about like consistency and that.
Quarterback turns around. There's three dudes crossing. Yeah. I don't even know who has the ball.
No, it's a confusing offense. And if you don't practice it, because I remember in high school, I mean, fuck, dude. We would play like one team ran the wing tee, one ran the option, and then we had a bunch of pro styles. So like we'd go into a team and it's like, you know, like fucking these guys are pitching. You know, first guy takes the, you know, pitch guy, and then you're like, and it's, I don't hard know, dude. And like all of a sudden you tackle a dude and it's like you look over and the fucking quarterback's running back.
You hear the crowd cheering. Yeah.
I mean, it's cool.
So it's I know we got to get going here.
Yeah, but, no, I mean I'm gonna try to squeeze these guys out, but. Man, fuck, dude. I feel like one, we could do this podcast for fucking another 6 hours. But I mean, dude, it's like it's been so cool to see not only the success and the impact you've made in terms of your 5-3-1 and what you've done, and then you know, like fucking where the rubber meets the road, where you go out to a local high school and you're like, hey, you know what? We wrote about this. All these fucking people jerked off on it all over the internet on it. You know what? Let's see it in practical deal.
Well, that was a huge, I remember thinking, like, if I don't take this job, my status is fine. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, fuck it. Like, I'll just see if I'm any good. And because I hadn't coached in a couple of years. And like, coaching's hard. Like, coaching's not, like we talked about this, coaching's not personal training. And personal training is, like we said, I'd rather coach than personal train. Yeah. But you got to get 60 fucking idiots.
I always think animals have trainers, coaches have people have coaches.
Yes.
And like, you know, and like the job of the coach is to impact the athlete.
Yes.
You know, and the interesting thing is I always think about it in a positive way, but I can think back at how many coaches I've had impacted me in a negative way. And what I never want to do is have somebody look like 20 years later and be like, that fucking asshole.
Yeah. And I think,
because I'm sure you can think, I can tell you coaches have been like, that fucking piece of shit, I will remember him to the day I die for being a fucking asshole.
I still remember him, especially in high school. I had all really good coaches, and maybe they might not have been the best, and I'm not judging this at all, they might not have been the best X's and O's or whatever, but they all fucking cared. And those guys had been together for a long time, and my dad knew them because, you know, he's at that high school. And they genuinely cared about you. And then you get to college and you understand, like, it's not the same thing at all. Yeah. And it's, but there is still some coaches today that I'm like, holy shit, you're the worst. How do you even have a job?
And you're like, I fucking can't believe that one, people haven't just got rid of you to flush you because you're toxic.
Yeah. And there's other coaches like Dino Babers, who's a head coach at Syracuse, the best coach I ever had. And he's, sir.
Yeah, we're almost done.
He called me one time because I knew that. He was at Baylor. I'm going to get this. And I was at EFS and I was talking about Dino Babers or writing about it. And the Baylor coach is like, oh my God, Coach Babers. Like, just, you remember this kid? He's like, oh yeah. So Babers calls me at EFS. He goes, Jimmy, my asshole still puckered up. And I was like, oh shit. What did I do wrong? Oh, he's like, heard you talking about me. I'm like, Coach Babers, I love you. I'm like, I have the greatest. And he's like, I know. I'm just saying, seeing how you're doing. Awesome. But it was like, and real quick, we had a 20 some odd year reunion for the football team for Arizona. I didn't go because I'm an asshole. I was speaking at the Swiss conference that weekend. But my buddy went, and they're like in a big, you know, conference, not a conference room, but a banquet kind of thing. And everyone's getting there saying hi and stuff. And head coach Dick Tomey, he's like, all right, boys, take a seat. And my buddy's like, dude, everyone shut the fuck up and hustled. He's like, it's been 30 years. Yeah. Like, oh my God, Tomey's going to get so mad at me. But yeah. He's going to check my, you know, I was in class, I swear.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, and I hopefully, you know, I'll be able to do this for God knows how long. And then I, you know, these kids at least have some good memories. Well, so
if you ever need anything from us, man, I'm more than happy to always help. And just hit me up, dude. So
thank
don't be
you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it. You guys want to go get a beer?
Yeah,
upstairs?
Let's go get a beer. Normally at this point when we sign off, we ask how you can get a hold of Jim Wendler, but you can't. So we'll end it here.
Yeah.
See ya. Thanks for tuning in to Power Athlete Radio.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales you've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.